Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
So tonight's episode is the 1989 thriller, James Bond, Timothy Dalton, License to Kill, directed by our least favorite James Bond director, John Glenn.
This is the best Timothy Dalton Bond movie ever.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
That's funny.
I like some of the constituent parts of this movie, but I did not have a good time watching this. It was painful. So, Brother Jay, why don't you introduce us to License to Kill?
I don't want to.
What's your relationship with this movie?
It's in the box set.
Do you ever just throw it on and let it play?
Because
it's one of your...
No.
Do you have Bond movies that you do that?
Yes.
For instance?
Well, Moonraker, A View to a Kill, Casino Royale.
A View to a Kill. Nice.
I love View to a Kill. I really do. It's maybe just because, I don't know, it's that whole Duran, Christopher Walken, crazy, you know,
Butterflies? Grace Jones?
Well, I don't know what the...
Oh, come on.
There were parts of this movie that were bafflingly bad, but I liked it overall better than the last one.
Parts of this movie were from the book that we read.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. No.
Like, ripped right from the book.
Exactly. No, Live and Let Die lives on. I'm glad we read it because...
The best part of this movie, Robert Davi.
Oh, without a doubt. Although, as it turns out, I think I'm a fan of Carrie Lowell, Mrs. Richard Gere.
Oh, is that who she is?
Well, until recently. They were married for like 13 years.
I like her from Law and Order.
I don't recognize her from Law and Order, but...
She was the assistant DA for a really long time. She had super short hair.
Ah.
Jamie.
She can work it, though. That short hair, she's got it working.
Yeah, I didn't like that they made her fall in love with Bond. Like
instantly.
Both of the ladies that fell in love with Bond made no sense.
Yeah.
And detracted from the movie. But yeah, you're right. Other than that, I liked what they did with her character. They tried to make her like a kick-ass lady.
Halfway.
Yeah.
They made her a kick-ass lady, yet who is smitten with Bond, who has no charm in this movie.
No, I liked that part of it. I liked that he was sort of a beaten down bomb. He got beat up a lot in this movie, which I liked.
Yeah. He also looked really disheveled most of the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a lot of windblown or the longer 80s hair, but I don't know. I did not like this movie.
Also, it had the most Q of any of the movies.
Oh, yeah, which would be fine. Well, okay. Two things I can think of. One is there was a writer strike. So one of the producers actually had to come in and, like, scab write the rest of the plot.
This explains a lot. So, also, the one thing I want to make is I realized that Jump the Shark was literal from Happy Days, but they literally jumped the shark in this movie, too. So, it was crazy.
Yeah, well, okay, here's another thing that works at this movie's disadvantage. We have seen Driving Miss Daisy, an Oscar award-winning movie with subtle acting performances. We have seen Jaws, the literal summer tentpole movie. And we have seen Apocalypse Now, which is a journey through a man's soul with all sorts of crazy, over-the-top, yet really fantastic performances. And then we have Priscilla Barnes in this movie. And Priscilla Barnes was fine as Terry from Three's Company.
Three's Company.
But she used the same acting chops. Like, I was waiting for her to turn and do like a Mr. Roper look at straight to camera.
She did that, right? I'm pretty sure she did.
I'm telling you, it was awful. And Drew, one of the things I know you've criticized in past movies, not just Bond movies, but like whipsaw, whiplash, tonal changes. Like, this movie had that in.
Were there any in this movie? That's weird.
Yeah. You know, the movie opens, the cold open is James Bond, Timothy Dalton, and Felix Leiter, David Hedison, who's back, by the way, as Felix Leiter, who are on their way for Felix to get married to Della Churchill, who's played by Priscilla Barnes. Come and knock on our door.
By the way, is it a thing? This is not a tradition I'm aware of, that everybody gets to make out with the bride.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Like, everybody who showed up was like, I just came to kiss the bride.
Yeah. Well, she seemed quite smitten with the Bond.
Yep. Everybody was.
Yeah.
Well, Three's Company.
And then on the way, they get stopped on their way to one of the keys in Key West. And they get stopped because now the Felix...
skeleton key.
Felix he's been transferred to or is working in conjunction with the DEA to capture this drug lord, a Pablo Escobar type, named Franz Sanchez, played by Robert Davi, of Die Hard fame, and lots of other things.
I was in seventh grade, dickhead.
Is that a quote from Die Hard?
Yes.
He was one of the, what were they? The
Agent Johnson?
Yeah, Big Johnson, Little Johnson. So we have a lot of 80s tropes in this movie. We have Miami Vice clothing. We've got the Pablo Escobar drug lord. We've got the Manuel Noriega dictator. Because the country of Isthmus is supposed to be Panama. We have, to skip ahead just a little bit, we've got crazy Dr. Gene Scott, Jim Baker, televangelist, played by Wayne Newton. And we've got an amazingly young Benicio del Toro, who is del Toroing it up from the very beginning. He has always been Benicio del Toro.
At least he wasn't like torturing people with a 5-gallon jug of water.
No, but he was right up with that. No, we gave it her a honeymoon. Like, what? What kind of choice is that?
Where's my wife?
Don't worry. We gave her a nice honeymoon.
Get it! Robert Davi. So I know him best from The Profiler.
Yeah.
I loved him in that.
That's the Ali Walker.
Yeah. He plays Leonid Brezhnev in the upcoming Reagan movie.
Ah, I'm glad he's still working.
Yeah, he's got a ton of stuff right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He's got 9 projects right now.
He's also a singer. He sings Frank Sinatra standards.
Regrets. I've had a few. But then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do. And saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this. I did it my way.
Wow. Well,
that's weird.
Also, I got conflicting results when I looked for results of this movie for financials. Because IMDb has a very low figure, but Wikipedia has a very high figure. Wikipedia reports 156 million box office, but Wikipedia says only 33 million, which is a huge discrepancy.
Yeah, I think it was, I think the budget was like 35, but it made like 33 in the US domestic gross. But worldwide, it made like 170 something. Which is, it's a moneymaker, but not as much as they wanted, because this movie went against everything. This was a summer blockbuster. This was the last Bond summer blockbuster because it got killed.
Yeah, July 16th.
Yeah, it was going up against, what, Die Hard 2? And, oh no, Lethal Weapon 2. What else was on there?
So July 89, Shag, Haunted Summer, Weekend at Bernie's.
Weekend at Bernie's, okay.
Lethal Weapon 2.
Yeah.
When Harry Met Sally.
Okay.
Friday the 13th, Part 8, and Turner and Hooch.
There was something else that summer. Maybe later.
Parenthood, Lockup, Sex, Lies, and Videotapes, Young Einstein, The Abyss.
The Abyss, okay.
Nightmare on Elm Street, Uncle Buck.
Okay. Yeah, so in terms of against... because I think they were expecting a $210 million movie, and they got a $170 million movie.
June before Dead Poets Society, Star Trek V, Ghostbusters 2, Batman.
Okay, yes. So
Batman.
Yeah.
Batman. So,
between Batman's Batman when I started and in the Abyss and Lethal Weapon, right there.
And Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah.
So Batman, by the way, $250 million.
Oh, yeah. That was the first Michael Keaton Batman?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
That was the first movie theater movie for me.
Yeah.
That was fucking nuts.
I'm sure.
It was bonkers. I remember going into the theater at 9 o'clock in the morning before we opened at 11, and we did nothing but pop popcorn for 2 hours.
I remember they handed out like a catalog of Batman merch. To buy,
yeah.
When you went in to go see the movie,
there was so much merch in that movie that was available.
We had it in 70 millimeter and 35 millimeter. It was in three theaters.
I was gonna say it's one of those ones where the actual film went from projector to projector.
We had a 70 millimeter in the big theater and a 35 millimeter print in two theaters. So we had six theaters, and theater six was the 70 millimeter. And theaters 1 and 5 were 35 millimeter on opposite sides.
And it was like your show times were 12 and 12:05.
It was something like that.
So that's, yeah. So this movie had some things going against it.
Like, it was terrible?
Well, to me, it almost fine. You know, the problem is it was so... It's hard to say this is a criticism of Bond movies because they're all derivative. But literally, they went and took stuff from Live and Let Die...
Uh-huh.
And basically Sharky, what was their friend? What was Sean Connery's fishing buddy's name? And then they brought in a new one. God, I can't remember the guy's name.
Oh, I remember who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't they say he was like the son of the other guy?
Exactly. Yes. But this guy was no relation, but he's basically the same character.
There were a couple really bad acting performances in this movie.
A couple?
And yeah, well, and when there's, you know, one or two, I blame it on those particular actors. But when there's a bunch, you know who I blame that on?
The director. The
shitty director.
Yes.
Well, and like the super slow-mo DEA agents at the beginning, what was that even about? They got the two black guys with the guns in the beginning of the movie that's like super slow-mo.
Yeah, that was a really weird slow-mo scene when they came running off the chopper for no reason.
Yeah, it was like an AT moment. It mm-hmm. served no purpose.
No, it was an AT moment. I mean, okay, what about the DEA guys who were basically the like the all-black Crockett and Tubbs team?
Yeah.
Like, what was about? They just popped in for a second. It was like a lot of style for one scene. I mean, like, it seems like it was like, hey, we need a guy who looks like this character on TV right now.
Well, also, they ripped off Roadhouse. That whole bar scene is Roadhouse.
It really was.
I mean, none of this movie was original. I mean, it was just so bad.
I actually got my hopes up at that slow-mo scene. I was like, oh, snap. They're going to do something interesting with this movie. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. It just made it so much more bizarre. Why did they have that in there?
This is also a pretty narrow movie as far as James Bond didn't go very many places. He basically went from the Keys down to like Central America. There was no skiing in this movie.
No, but he stayed in a bunch of different places.
I mean,
you know, there was the hotel, there was the drug lord's palace, and there was that like weird ninja torture room.
Also unnecessary. I think I read somewhere that they intended to make this about like drugs in the like from the triad and the golden triangle of Southeast Asia, but they couldn't afford to shoot in places like China.
Because they spent it all on the writing.
So instead they shot in Arizona or wherever. And what the fuck is up with Wayne Newton?
Like, well, I don't know. Because I kind of have a soft spot for Wayne Newton. I thought it was a great performance.
He was good.
Oh, he was fine.
It was weird.
But it was
molestery.
It was weird. It didn't go
my
anywhere.
Soundproof room.
I mean, this movie could have, because Robert Davi was such an interesting bad guy.
No, but the religious aspect as cover for, you know, fronting the drug operation is kind of genius brilliance, as far as I'm concerned. That premise, if that had been a bigger plot point, I think that would have made a much greater movie. Because that's genius. It's a way to communicate on TV and cover up and launder your money, and people give money to religion. I mean, and it's this ethereal product where you don't necessarily get a tangible return on your investment because it's, you know, you're buying God. So there was so much more they could have done with that. But
was
they didn't.
It was it unclear that Wayne Newton ever met Robert Davi? I mean, they existed in two whole different worlds.
No, well, they had contact on the phone.
And what? Okay, wait. I'm going to skip to the very end. This is going to be one of those ones that if you're listening to this and haven't seen the movie, and I'm going to tell you,
no,
don't even bother.
Don't watch it.
But
yeah.
But if you're hoping that you can listen to us and we're going to read point by point so you can avoid seeing the movie and still be literate about it, I don't think we're even going to get there. But let's skip to Truman Lodge, played by Anthony Stark, who was the weirdo accountant at the end of the movie. What was he doing with that balls in his hand? The ping pong ball thing? Did you notice that, Drew?
No.
It got my, like, juggler Spidey sense going, thinking, oh, he's going to do something amazing juggling at the end because he's doing this little bit of, like, sleight of hand thing with this ball. Like you know, like you do
well,
a coin
run. Mr. Bacon look too cool for school.
Yeah, but it just, yeah. It seemed like they wanted to shove so much into this movie.
They killed somebody with electric eels.
And that, you know, that would be great, except it was stolen from Live and Let Die. That whole area. And then they shoved it all together. Oh, okay. Just as an example. So we have the cold open where we end up catching a small plane with a helicopter, which I thought was pretty cool. I don't know if it would actually work, but doesn't matter. It's pretty cool.
No.
And then they parachuted into the wedding, which is pretty fun. All cheeky. Priscilla Barnes was all Priscilla Barnesy, and Felix was all happy, and Bond was all happy, and Sharky looked out of place in a gray suit with the top hat.
And what do they give Bond as a gift? The Felix lighter.
Yes, but you know what? This is, remember when I suggested that, like, I thought it was weird that Timothy Dalton smoked in the last movie? Because it just seemed like a choice with no plot results.
They had to have it in this one.
Yeah, in this movie, at least, I mean, it was very beginning. It was ham-fisted. It was Chekhov's gun in the first act that you knew he was going to have to set someone on fire.
Did either of you watch the credits to this?
I did not. Is there a post-credit scene?
No.
No, there's a big Surgeon General's black box warning at the end about smoking.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Oh, that's nice.
So I was amused. I was amused at that because as a pharmacy, we see lots of black box warnings. So I'm amused when I see them in the real world examples because you never see them. Nobody smokes anymore.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is definitely that tracked right for 1989.
But parts of this movie, I mean, parts of this movie were genius. I mean, there was a lot of smart parts to this. No, not a lot. There were a few very smart parts to this movie.
We're, I'm going to have you point out the genius moment.
When he was stabbing underwater the drugs to disperse them, that was genius.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, so let me just interrupt here for just a second. So we go from this lighthearted catch a plane with the helicopter, fun, you know, wedding, pre-wedding scene. And then we go to the goofy thing where Felix is taking his work too seriously on his wedding day and possibly having an affair with the girl in the cabana or whatever that turns out to be important later, Mrs. Richard Gere. But then, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we get our whiplash tonal shift, and Felix loses his bride on his wedding day, much like James Bond did a couple of movies ago. His wife is killed, maybe maimed a bit before killed.
Oh, she got Del Toro'd for sure.
Honeymoon.
Babaloo.
And Lucy.
Yeah, I was gonna say he could be Desi Arnaz.
He could be, yeah. But no, and Felix gets his leg bitten off and his arm bitten off, and they wimped out because in the books, he actually ends up having like a prosthetic leg and a hook for an arm after this encounter. But this is a serious Jason's, you know, it's an audio podcast, so when you make visual jokes, well, funny.
It was an homage to our babysitter.
Oh, come on. Yeah, she was great.
I saw her last time I was there.
Yeah. Oh, no. Shout out to Stephanie.
Yeah.
This is where James Bond should turn into Daniel Craig and be focused for the rest of the movie as being, okay, you have now done the same thing to my friend that happened to me, and I am out for vengeance.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
Yeah, exactly. And this in this movie, the original posters, I think, said like he was like disarmed, disgraced, or something, and out for vengeance. But he didn't seem super out for vengeance, did he? I mean, he didn't.
Well, he quit his job.
I think he did.
Yeah, he was overwrought.
Maybe I'm used to Daniel Craig being like single-minded.
Yeah, I mean, he went rogue. Oh, that's another weird tonal thing. M in this movie is a total a-hole, right?
Oh, yeah.
They took M and made him like the cranky police chief who's like, give me your badge and your gun.
Yeah, and then it was like, shoot him.
Yeah, and then M tried to kill Bond. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Not here. Like, what? Yeah. I've revoked your license to kill.
Yeah. Which means Bond is a straight-up murderer now.
Yeah. Well, and, okay. They tried to, and I'm going to hopefully blame it on the writer's strike, but they tried to shoehorn some one-liners in this movie that was the worst.
You don't say.
The fact that they're shooting on, I guess, Ernest Hemingway's estate, when M takes his license away, and he's like, well, I guess that's a farewell to arms. But it's kind of a too on-the-nose inside joke. Also, was it necessary to whip Lupe Lamora with a stingray tail and never explain it?
No.
Like, did you know that was a stingray tail?
Nope.
Nope.
Yeah, they never explained it.
It just looked like some weird bondage thing. I was like, ugh.
Really weird bondage thing. It was like, that had multiple different angles I was not expecting.
And they must have really spent a lot of money on that shark tank thing, by the way, because they used it twice.
Oh, yeah. No, they went back to the
That chewed up more scenery than anything else in this movie.
Yeah.
Well, and the pressure chamber.
Oh, well, hold on. We're going to get the... I thought the pressure chamber was shockingly effective.
I was watching this movie on the plane sitting next to my wife. And she, I don't know, just happened to be kind of looking over my shoulder like during that final pressure chamber scene. And I noticed, so, yeah, after, what was his name?
Milton Crest.
Yeah, so after Crest's demise, I looked over at her, And she just shook her head at me with like such a look of disappointment.
I'm not upset with you. I'm just disappointed in your choices.
What do we do with the money, boss? Launder it.
Also, on the estate with all the cats, for a moment, it made it act as if it was that Bond was coming up to Blofeld.
Oh, yeah. No, and the fact that he was petting his lizard, just like Blofeld petted his cat, ridiculous. Where to begin? Okay, let's talk about the genius parts. We've got Ed Kilifer, who's an agent that takes Sanchez's blood money to let him go. We've got Milton Crest, played by Anthony Zerbe, who has been in everything, mostly Westerns. He's got one of those faces, and he didn't seem to be a very good actor in this movie.
Now, like if he had a stroke, because he had one eye that was creepy.
Yeah,
that's how bad John Glenn is. Like, the actors had a stroke trying to work with him.
Well, we have Talisa Soto, who played Lupe Lamora. And I don't know much about Talisa Soto, although I do know she looked like a little bit like a Mexican soap opera actress, because that Mexican soap opera actress had posters in Mexico like selling her, promoting her performances, saying that she was in this movie, even though she wasn't.
Oh, nicely done.
Yeah, which is great.
Well, no, nobody saw it, so.
Yeah, well, and Lupe Lamora as the femme fatale, she was a big zero, as far as I was concerned. She was, like, plastic and not the least bit interesting.
They both were, though.
You think Carrie Lowell was, too?
Yeah.
At least she had some action scenes.
It was stilted. Yeah, no. The action scenes were fine, but the woe is me, like he doesn't love me, jilted girlfriend wannabe was just, I don't know, it was awful.
And this was kind
That's not that actress's fault, though. That's just really terrible writing.
No, but absolutely. Right. No, she was acting what I'm sure was written, but the writing was schlock. I know she's a better actress than that because on Law and Order, she was great.
So we've got Underwater Bond. That's a standard. No skiing again. I was disappointed. You know what? Pierce Brosnan better fucking ski.
No.
There was water skiing.
There was skiing.
Okay, you're right. I was wrong. Yes. We had late 90s water sports. And we've got, because the Cold War is winding up at this point in real history, we have going on to like the drug war. So we get clear and present danger plot line. And I thought the shtick of, or the conceit of having the cocaine be melted into the fuel and then taken out of there, I think that's actually clever, sort of a real thing, kind of. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know. This was the worst. And the bar scene was Roadhouse. Yeah, it was. Especially.
Well, also, she get the shotgun under the table? How did she get that in the bar?
Yeah, no, I don't know. Also, the fact that. So the bar scene could have been slightly over the top. But no, they had to have a goon, grab a swordfish off the wall and start fighting Bond with the swordfish. Come on.
Do you want to talk about the bad ninjas later?
Yeah, why do we have to incorporate ninjas in this movie? There was no reason for it.
No, it's the 80s. That's law. It was law.
Well, were you puzzled when you saw the opening titles that had, like, the Japanese woman prominently displayed, and then you realize, I don't see any Japanese names in this movie. Until way down on the cast list. And the song, we haven't even talked about the title song. I think, didn't you tell me this was Tina Turner?
No, Goldeneye.
Oh, okay, yeah, because this is not. This is Patti LaBelle. Or
Patti LaBelle.
Yeah, this is horrible. This is a horrible song.
Also, nothing to recommend it. At the end, the song that I recognized, at the closing credits, was the song I recognized, but it wasn't the same singer. And I was like, wait a minute, the song is from it's a Celine Dion song. Oh. Holy crap.
You know, Eric Clapton was supposed to do this theme as an acoustic. Oh, sorry, not acoustic, a cappella. No, not what? Instrumental. How about that?
Ooh, I hope not.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry.
Wasted talent.
Instrumental, yeah. That didn't work out. That fell through. Yeah, so this is a movie that has almost no money, Penny. Q comes in for a while, but he's so old. It's just goofy. So it's, at least it's a familiar face. M is a big old snooze. Wayne Newton shows up.
My room is soundproof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have the Asians. It's just, this is like a mishmash. This is the worst. I hope it is.
here's what I liked about the movie. I did like that it was sort of an angrier Bond. I thought Timothy Dalton did well with that, with the material he was given. Like Jason said before, I liked the whole boat, submarine, plane action sequence. I thought that was way better than it deserved to be, with Bond just sort of acting out in anger, just fucking shit up, which was great.
Yeah, that was kind of satisfying to see.
Well, and you're right.
He's stealing drug money. He's destroying drugs. I like that sort of heist element to it where he's
fucking with the institution.
Yeah, or he's, you know, he takes the stolen money and uses it to create an account and uses that to parlay some gambling credit and then turns around and then uses that money again to frame one of the bad guys. I mean, I that was a clever bit that I liked. I liked the villain. He was in it a little bit different movie, but he was doing stuff and
he was a competent villain.
Yeah, he and Robert Davi committed. He was in. He was 100% in. I like that they tried to have a female counterpart, you know, take on some of the action. It was fun to see Bond sharing that load. twice. Yeah, I like that it was Bond going rogue and, you know, on his own as much as he could in a Bond movie.
But what was the point to the crazy chemistry combination compound batshit murder factory? Why would they have built this crazy giant compound for chemistry, but also made it Murderville?
Oh, yeah, and also made it with, they have no regard for saving that particular structure, even though it probably cost a couple of bucks. They can't even land their helicopter on top of it. They have to have a hatch so they can land their helicopter inside of it. For no reason.
And the semi scene just brought me to, like, the Knight Rider years.
I had to look it up to see whether or not it was possible to ride a semi tractor on two wheels. And turns out, it is not only possible, but it required nothing but the stuntman doing it.
What?
My favorite thing about this movie, nobody says Spunin.
Which is good.
Shelly Spetsnaz.
That right there made it the better Timothy Dalton movie.
Well, okay, but just to play rewriter while we're doing this. If I were to rewrite this movie, slim it down for God's sakes. Robert Davi is a great bad guy. Mm-hmm. Benicio del Toro is a fine henchman, right? It's got that evil look and the crazy Del Toro like verbiage. You've got the femme fatale who is a little blank, but that's okay. You don't need Wayne Newton. You don't need any of the Chinese or the black guys with the soul glow in their hair, DEA agents. I mean, all you need is basically Crest versus Sanchez, and that's fine. That's a plenty good landscape, and that way Bond can fool Sanchez into killing Crest, and then it's just Bond on Sanchez action.
I liked Wayne Newton.
Oh yeah, but didn't it just went off and left field? There's no reason that you need the accountants. You have a nice little scene where you have the big bundles of cocaine being whatever that machine is called, the wood chipper sort of machine. But other than basically, so now we have people's legs getting chopped off by a shark, and then we have legs getting chopped off by the by that grinder thing. Tell me more about Genius, Jason, because I'm not getting it.
I gave you all I had.
I mean, I guess I thought that the semi scenes went on too long.
Yeah, the semi was too long. But here's the other thing. Here was one of the other things that I wrote down that I was like, what the fuck? Okay, so they go to this elaborate trouble to give him all these super stealthy, like, here's your super stealth explosion kit, right? With the dental gel explosive agent, which he uses outside covertly where nobody is going to see it.
Well, okay, I didn't consider that, but you're absolutely right.
What was the point of having to sneak around this tube of toothpaste outside where it's in secret where nobody could see it?
Also,
if they could see it, they would.
Also, in what circumstance, if you get stopped and frisked by security and you're wearing a tuxedo and they find a gigantic tube of toothpaste? Never.
Yeah. So that was some of my that was just, it didn't make sense. Again, I was trying to find sense in this movie and now it didn't happen. But so no.
What's the next movie on our Bond list?
GoldenEye.
Is it GoldenEye?
It's got to be GoldenEye, right? I thought GoldenEye was the first Pierce Brosnan one. No, it has to be GoldenEye. I've been holding out. I've been hanging on by my fingernails.
I'm going to say, because right now I'm at that point. Yep, it is GoldenEye.
Tell me it was directed by someone else.
Oh, yeah. This is the last John Glenn movie. They had a parting of ways. This is the last movie. This is actually an end of an era because we've got Cubby Broccoli. This is his last movie, or he was on set at least.
Wow, they were pretty brisk with the Pierce Brosnan films. GoldenEye was 95, Tomorrow Never Dies 97, The World Is Not Enough 99, and Die Another Day 2002.
That's brisk, baby.
Oh yeah, no, they wanted to crank him out.
They did. Well, that's impressive.
Well, remember, you have to do your bonds before they get too old. And all it takes is one stumble, so you got to be able to forge on. Because the first one that loses money, which hasn't happened yet to this day, that will be a problem.
GoldenEye was directed by the same dude that did Casino Royale.
I do not know.
Was it?
Yeah.
Let me look.
Yeah. It's going to be good, right?
Oh,
it's good, right?
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope so. So, License to Kill. Any other trivia, any other fun facts, anything we care about?
I didn't even bother looking at the special stuff.
Yeah, neither did I.
I just couldn't bring myself. I was watching it and I didn't remember how bad it was. And the longer I watched it, I couldn't believe how bad it was. And by the end of it, I couldn't believe I watched it and how bad it was.
Well, and as I was telling Kelly, like, there are individual parts of it that I thought were fine. But as a whole, it was drudgery to go through.
It was difficult for me to get through, and yeah.
And you're the fan.
Yeah. Well, not of this movie, but yeah.
Well, so, okay, Brother Jay, what's your verdict?
Oh, this is a D. This is a dog of a movie. Don't watch it. Don't even bother. Just to save yourself the money or in time, effort, frustration. Just don't. Take our word for it. Just go watch something else. Go watch anything else. Go watch Tiptoes.
Enjoy yourself some Godfather 3. So, Brother Drew, was it worth it?
That's a tough one. If you're a completionist, then yeah, it's worth it. If you want to hit at least one of every Bond actor movie, I'd say I think this is the one Dalton to watch. But otherwise, no, it's not worth it. You know, unless you're like a huge Robert Dobby fan, no.
Which is a respectable viewpoint. But yeah, no, it's honeymoon. Okay, so yeah, skip it. Next. So we have housekeeping. Brother Jay, you want to start?
podcast for Apocalypse Now was fascinating. It gave me a chance to kind of reorganize my thoughts. I like the late night in bed me texting my alternate female version recast. So
go ahead with you, share that.
I don't know why that struck me. Is it?
Oh,
did,
no, it's well, because Drew started it.
He did, but I'm telling you, Susie Kurtz is Chief, Meredith Baxter is Willard, Goldie Hawn is Lance, Whoopi Goldberg is Clean, and Marla Gibbs is Chief. That's like, you know, and maybe Katherine Hepburn as Kurtz and Stalker Channing as Kilgore. I don't know.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
It would be a fun movie.
There were things I could do than to napalm a village or two.
As an abrupt ending.
The podcast? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's why. It's because we did a little bit of the housekeeping in the beginning, and so I had to kind of retcon it to the end. So, yeah. Yeah. So some of them end kind of abruptly. This is always a work in progress. This, by the way, was a, for our audience, it was a hit. So far, this has as many downloads as I think it is of the last 20. Only George Michael has more downloads, and it's been out for months. So,
wow.
Yeah. So in 3-4 days, whatever this has been, it's a winner.
So that's weird. When we talk about movies that are really popular,
people listen. Okay, well here's a little piece. So you know I've been shouting out individual listeners. So this is a time where I'm going to shout out some individual listeners. First of all, Barry, constant listener Barry, can't say his name enough. He is always like Johnny on the spot to thumbs up whenever an episode comes out on Facebook. Also, listener Dougie from the UK. He is Johnny on the spot, downloading it, thumbs-upping it. Fantastic. And listener Lindsay posted about Driving Miss Daisy just less than 2 hours ago. She's like, hey, it was nice to hear you guys actually talk about a movie I am interested in because I don't like spoilers, and I love to hear your banter.
Does Lindsay have a film suggestion, perhaps?
I did. I asked her. I said, okay. So she said... Mary Poppins, A League of Their Own. Lindsay says she loves RV for a Vendetta app. So would we consider Angels in America? She'd probably listen repeatedly. Same with On the Edge with Cillian Murphy or The Station Agent with Peter Dinklage.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Yeah. Cillian Murphy, Red Lights, right?
Yeah, he was also in Bruges.
He was?
Wasn't he the priest? Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else.
I
think of Ciarán Hinds?
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of Ciarán Hinds. Who's Cillian
Murphy? Isn't he from like 28 Days Later?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I don't know. So anyway, yeah. So listener Lindsay, we're going to have more movies that you have watched. Things that you will, you know, I think just literally being able to do Driving Miss Daisy has opened up a little bit of at least opened up my mind to things that maybe... people have seen before, so they might be able to, especially if you don't like, I know listener Michael says that he doesn't like to listen to episodes of movies he's not seen. In fact, I loaned him because somebody brought like the 5 books of the trilogy of Night Watch. There are now 5 books in the Night Watch series. Someone brought them to work. I'm like, hey, I've got 2 of those movies sitting at home in a place where I know where they are, which in my house of hoarderdom is a rare thing. So I brought him in, and his instant reaction was like, well, he described Night Watch as if Carrot Top directed Silence of the Lambs.
Oh no.
Like what? He remembers the book, and he thought that the movie was an ill representation of the book.
No.
But I thought the movie had really interesting stylistic choices.
The book must have been way more serious in tone then, because the movie was a little goofy.
It was super goofy.
Yeah.
But it was also fun. Mm-hmm. Again, I can visualize some of the effects that I thought were fantastic in that movie. But yeah, he was not impressed by that movie. His wife walked out after about 30 minutes and he got an hour into it. And he listened to our episode. See, that's the thing, is that he didn't want to listen to our episode unless he's seen the movie. So that leads to downloads, which is nice. And like I said, Driving Miss Daisy, although it's not as popular as, say, Apocalypse Now, I think there are probably way more, if you just like Google Apocalypse Now podcasts, we're not even on the first three pages probably. But I bet you if we put Driving Miss Daisy podcast, we'd be up there. So
I would love to throw a Station Agent on the calendar.
Let's do it. And we've already got, you know, this month is going to be a good one for that, because we have so next week is the 200th episode where we're just going to riff and maybe talk about things we did in the past, things we would have liked to do, things that we will do in the future that we learned. Mistakes we hopefully won't make again. Drew has a very interesting way of coming up with a top 10 list of Not in a Creepy Way movies, or maybe Brothers Anderson movies. So he's been working on it. And by the way, I want to publicly say how impressed I am of you sent us a list of like five different ways we could rank these movies, like different weighting methods. And Brother Jay expressed some of what I was feeling when he just talked about, he marveled at your mathematical prowess. And I was like, bullshit. You're just making this up at a certain point. I'm like, Fibber-McGee and Nachi. Yeah, no, I'm not in. That's just, you're just making that up. But nope. Tip of the hat to the people with more education than me. That's my two brothers.
They're all real things.
Yeah, no, I'm sure they are. Yeah. So if you want to do the double blind Fibonacci cool hand Luke method, that's fine by me, whatever. I put it in your capable hands. So that'll be fun. And then I have another, at the very end, I'll wait till the very end and I'll give people warning so they can turn it off. But I want to do another helmet, not helmet. Why do I call him helmet? Wolfgang Supercut.
Oh, God.
Because it pleases me to do so. But I also have a series of outtakes that's about 8 minutes long. It may be a short one or maybe a long one. Who knows? So, any other housekeeping, Brother Jay?
We got a shout out to Jonathan Demme.
Yes, poor one out.
So that was kind of bummer. I have my tickets for Guardians of the Galaxy 2 on Saturday.
I have never seen Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
Oh, it's awesome.
That's what they tell
me. You got to see it. It's awesome.
It's in Jason's top 50 of all time.
Friday night, I finish up my wedding project. Saturday morning, I deliver my wedding project, and then I will be going to the movies.
Sweet. Okay, so, Drew, you got a story to tell?
Yes. Sure, yeah. What have you heard?
I've heard, no, I'm hoping that you're going to tell me you went to San Francisco and watched Hamilton.
I did.
And? Was it all you'd hoped and more?
It was. We had a great experience. Although Jason cursed us. He's like, good luck flying in and out of that San Francisco airport. Yeah, good luck indeed.
I warned you, man.
it was bad. We were delayed going in, so we flew into Seattle and we're catching a connection to San Francisco. We got there. We already had like an hour and a half layover. And then we got there. And at first it just said delayed. Like with no departure time. We're like, oh, shit. But by the time we got to the gate to check things out, we had a departure time. It was just an hour and a half late. So turned into a 3-hour layover. Which is fine. We got somebody to the airport. But by the time we got into San Francisco and got a car and the driver took us to the hotel. It was downtown. We're staying at a very nice place, the Four Seasons.
Did you, by a car, do you mean you got like an Uber or a Lyft or a cab or a car service? Or
it was a car service.
From the hotel?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep. It was nice.
we had a chauffeur. He was like carrying our bags and was making me very uncomfortable.
Awesome.
It's not a lifestyle I lead.
I assume you tipped him well.
I did. I think I did. It felt big for me.
Yeah.
but he was, I don't know. He might've walked away from me like, what a jerk. Who knows? I'm bad at knowing how to tip.
Well, worst case, you wouldn't be a jerk. You'd be a rube.
Okay. That's fine. I am. So we got to the hotel really late and, we're checking in and, my wife had booked us, a fairly nice room. Like more than I would have been willing to pay for a hotel room. But we got there and the dude said that they'd actually had some schedule changes and all of that type of room had been carried over. So they didn't have any that night. So he said that they just went ahead and upgraded us to a suite. We're like, oh, okay, great. And yeah, we've stayed in suites before. It's cool. You have an extra room and a second TV. So we were like, all right, great, thanks. As it turns out, we were ungrateful a-holes because we got up to our room and it was enormous. It was bigger than any of our apartments that we had.
Wow.
Turns out they had upgraded us to the presidential suite. And yes. Yeah, so we walked in there and we were like, holy crap, there's been a mistake. This cannot be real. Because it went on forever. We walked in and I actually ended up taking a video just to memorialize it of walking through. And it took me 3 minutes just to like walk through and video everything.
Oh man, so when you left, you had to walk through, make sure you didn't leave anything.
Yeah, well... Yeah, that was the thing. When we would like leave for the day, we were worried they wouldn't let us back in. like they were going to figure it out.
The jig was up.
But yeah, I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, it had like a guest bathroom and a butler kitchen.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, a huge, huge closet, vanity area, and had a dining table and a 14-person couch. It was way more room than we needed, but we enjoyed the heck out of it.
Excellent.
So it was like a condo, really.
It really was. It was, I was embarrassed, but it was great. And then, yeah, I realized, he's like, oh, we upgraded you to a suite. And seriously, like an a-hole, I was like, okay, great, thanks. I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm going to go up now.
Yeah, but they're probably used to that kind of clientele where they get that entitled California crowd.
Yeah, well. So it was, we appreciated it very much and we didn't know what to do with ourselves.
Did you fill out a comment card?
Yeah, I was going to say, go to their website and fill out a glowing comment and recommendation.
A Yelp review would help too. Although I think the Four Seasons doesn't really need your Yelp review, does it?
No. Yeah, I totally felt like Crocodile Dundee because it had a bidet.
Ah. Funny old, the bathroom had a drinking fountain in it.
Yep, pretty much. But yeah, and when my wife booked the room, she said it was for her birthday because it's kind of close to her birthday and that we were going to go see Hamilton. So they had like a nice little... like Hamilton sign up on the table for us. Say, you know, enjoy the show. Then they had like a piece of birthday cake waiting for us. So that was nice.
That's excellent.
Wow.
Yeah. So we just kind of crashed that night. And the next day we, walked around, our little area of San Francisco there, got the lay of the land.
It looked like beautiful weather.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was in the lower 70s. Which was a little too hot when you were directly in the sun, but there was a nice breeze. So it was perfect. It was perfect weather. So we kind of scoped out where the theater was in relation to our hotel. And it was a few blocks away. We figured out the little underground mass transit system, the BART. So we ended up taking that in the evening, which is fun. It was kind of silly. It was only one stop, but we did it. Yeah, coming from Alaska, something like that is a bit of a novelty.
Oh, yeah. So. I love subways.
Yeah, it was fun to just figure it out. Felt all big city. But yeah, and so we went to see Hamilton, and my wife had amazing seats. They were like five rows back, just off center. It was fantastic. And I realized something. I sort of had this inkling, but this experience really cemented it in my mind. The music to Hamilton is great, but it's even better when the person performing Hamilton can actually sing. It makes a huge difference.
Instead of Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Yes. Also, our Hamilton was a good actor.
Who he and he so was? That,
I'm going to butcher his name. It was like Michael Luoye. But he was a really fantastic Hamilton. He had a great voice. He had a really fantastic stage presence.
Well, here's a question. So you've lived with Hamilton for what, a year or more, right? Mm-hmm. Like you dove into Hamilton, much like many, many people I know, or maybe many people I listen to on a podcast who I pretend that they're my friends because I hear them in my ears all the time. But dove in hard, listened to it in the car, exposed your family, your children, they're all singing along.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have the experience that you realized you were missing a visual element to it after you saw it?
I did. Yeah, there was so much going on. There are so many visual cues that it made everything click into place. Yeah, it was fantastic. And there was some visual stuff that in the second half, particularly, that was devastating to watch. I mean, people were bawling.
Did you want to sing along?
No, I'm not really a sing-along guy. But I think going all the way back to our Thin Lizzy music episode, I described this feeling I get. It's not really like an ASMR type thing, but like when a piece of music just hits me in the right way, it almost takes my breath away, like physically. It's like that, like if you're crying and you like that moment before you like let out like a deep sob where you sort of take in that breath, sort of lose your breath for half a second. Like a really good musical moment gives that feeling to me. And I had that for like three straight hours. It was unbelievable. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
You have Broadway apnea.
Yeah. Yeah. There were parts in the beginning when it first started and I was like, oh my God, this is really happening, where it was almost too much. Like I couldn't take it.
That's awesome. That's fantastic to hear.
Yeah. I'm not very good at, expressing or describing things like emotions, but it was truly an unbelievable experience.
And did your lovely wife feel the same way?
Yeah. So she is not as big a fan. I think partly in reaction to probably how insufferable I've been to live with. Whenever I wanted to talk about Hamilton. But she was blown away. I mean, she's already talking about planning another trip to go take our children to see it.
Sweet.
So, yeah, she was, I mean, I don't know how familiar you guys are with the music or the show, but, the first act is very, like, raucous and upbeat and all about winning the Revolutionary War. And then the second half is really rough emotionally. So during intermission, she was like, this is amazing. This is so great. I can't wait for it to start up again. And I was just like, okay. Yeah. It's not going to be the same. but all the performers, and that not they were certainly not the original cast, but they were great. Some of them were, better, like Hamilton, and then some of I wouldn't say any of them were worse. They're definitely different. The Aaron Burr we had, didn't have the same charisma as Leslie Odom Jr. And that made it a really different experience because his Burr seemed way more sinister than the original, which worked fine. He was a really good performer, really good singer, had a great voice.
Yeah, well, that's why you want to see the difference. Like it would have been really interesting to see Robert Guillaume play Phantom of the Opera. Because he did.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I really cannot stress how big a difference it made to have a really fantastic performer be the lead, be the title character. Now, I'm not trying to shit on Lin-Manuel Miranda, because he wrote an unbelievably fantastic musical, I think a transcendent piece, but I don't think he's the best performer.
Well, he's also ripe to shit on because he's everywhere, and he's some of you want to drag down really very successful people, not you in particular, but you know, Schadenfreude or whatever.
Yeah, no, I want him to keep writing stuff. I mean, I like the music to Moana. I like this.
Have you seen his first big one? No, I forget what it's called.
In the Heights?
Yes.
I have not.
Well, that's where he made his bones or whatever.
Yeah, I could talk to you about it for probably another 20 minutes, but I will spare you.
But overall, you recommend it. When it comes to the Performing Arts Center with the Canadian troupe in 2025, you recommend we all get tickets?
Yes, probably twice.
Okay. Sweet.
You gotta Les Mis this thing up.
we saw Beauty and the Beast. So did your kids. Grandma was very generous.
I think that ours saw part of the first half.
Yeah.
This is what I heard.
Yeah. Well, the first Beauty and the Beast, the first act is only two acts. The first act is long. And it it was hot in the theater when we went. So it was, Kelly, poor Kelly, with her funky knee. And who doesn't really, I mean, her favorite thing is not musical theater anyway, but she was just putting on a brave face. She was not a big fan of the first half, although it had some of the better dancing and upbeat numbers. But we all liked the second act. It was a little bit shorter and, you know, had a great ending. But yeah, I found myself criticizing things in a way that maybe if I hadn't done the podcast, I wouldn't even understand. Like, well, I looked at The Beast and I look at Gaston, and I have never seen, by the way, Beauty and the Beast in any form, except maybe I saw an episode or two of the TV show. But
it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, Gaston is, he didn't seem like such a bad guy. I mean, especially when you compare, if he was a little bit pushy sexually, I don't know why we should criticize Gaston when he did it to Belle when Lumiere did it to everybody. It was cute. Lumiere was a horny candelabra. And the Beast, I didn't think was A, tall enough, or B, mean enough. So that,
Have I told you about the rant my coworker went on about Beauty and the Beast?
Remind me, because I think you did, but that's okay. It's good for...
She's a little bit younger than me, so like that's her Disney movie is that she grew up with. It was Beauty and the Beast, and she thinks it's responsible for ruining an entire generation of women because it told young girls that when you meet a guy and he's terrible to you, all you have to do is just love him a lot, and he'll eventually change into a prince.
Probably not words to live by. So, excellent. Well, that's awesome. Brother Jay, I expect you to tell us, regale us with wedding stories for next week. Are you attending this wedding?
Oh, no.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, no.
The best of all worlds.
No, no.
I think I excised it from the podcast last week, but you are performing acts of catering.
Yeah. Well, I'm it's a coworker, and I'm friendly with this coworker, enough that she knows I'm famous for my cheesecake. And so, you know, I'm making these cheesecake bites and, actually I'm super professional. I have a room full of paraphernalia right now because I have little clamshells to put the little cheesecake bites in.
Ah, very nice.
So we were talking about the logistics of how best to get these to her because I said, you know, how do you propose I get them to you? Because I can make them the day before, a couple days before, but they got to be kept cold. So you have to have a refrigerator to put them in. And I have a refrigerator to put them in to store them at my place, but... You know, I can't transport them 5 hours somewhere. You know, I can't keep them in my car for a couple hours. So it's not like I could take them to work and offload them somewhere and let them sit because they're perishable and they're better cold and chilled. And so she said, well, why don't we meet somewhere on Saturday morning? And I said, are you sure? Because the event is Saturday afternoon. And I said, you're going to have a lot of stress and stuff going on. And I'll meet you anywhere, but that just seems like last minute. And so I said, Friday night would probably be better. So anyway, long story short, she said, now it's Saturday. So I'm meeting her Saturday morning at 7 at our downtown office. Wow. So, which is fine for me. It'll take me 10 minutes to get there. It'll probably take her 20 minutes to get there. But so it would be a rendezvous. But no, I have no desire to go to a wedding of her daughter because I've never met the daughter and
yeah,
I'm not good at stuff. I'm turning into dad the older I get. I don't want to go and be social, especially with people I don't know, especially with people I barely know tangentially. I don't want to be social. So that's another reason I bought movie tickets for Saturday at noon because they're like, I got to be somewhere. So, like, you got to pick these things up at 7 because I got to be somewhere by 9 to eat breakfast to be back at the movie theater by noon. So,
cool. So, you like, is it a big group or is it just you and Jesse or is it?
It'd be me, Jesse, and Derek. So,
cool.
But the nice thing is it's a living room theater, so it's 21 and over only. And it's assigned seating.
And are you going to have like breakfast at the porch swing or whatever your favorite restaurant is there?
The screen door?
Yeah, whatever.
No, we'll probably just find breakfast someplace close. But screen door is a Portland institution. You have to line up like an hour in advance, and I'm not good with that usually. So
yeah, that seems ridiculous.
But so that'll be a fun weekend. I don't go to many movies. I watch a lot of movies at home, but I don't go to movies in movie theaters because it's expensive. So
turns out I don't either.
Plus crowds. So, but I mean, it's a nice theater. It's leather recliners and, you know, they've got gourmet garlic butter popcorn and, you know, they'll bring food to you if you want it and you can have booze and it's a nice theater. So I'm not opting for the 3D though. I just want the regular version.
Anyway, thank you again. And I will talk to you guys next Thursday, if not sooner. And good luck on the cheesecakes.
Oh, yeah. I've already done a test batch, so I'm good.
Okay, cool. Excellent. Nothing could go wrong.
I got it down.
Not at all.
Well, okay. The power could go out, but, you know, what can I do?
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.